Hi, Gracie. Okay, can you hear me?
I can you hear me?
I can. Someone said they couldn't hear me in the chat. Let me just double check that that's
Oh,
not
I can hear you
the
perfectly.
case. That's fine. Yeah. Well, I'll do. I'll pop these comments up. One sec. Okay, Grace, thank you so much for taking the time out to speak to the community. Really, really appreciate you coming on and having a chat with us. And for everyone who may not know the amazing work that you do, are you okay to just give a brief introduction of yourself, everything you do, and just why mental health advocacy is important to you?
Sure. Just a really simple question, not fully all-encompassing. No, Dean, thank you for having me. I love what you do. And for those that don't know me, I guess the easiest way to sort of summarize is I've been a content creator for like the past 13-ish, 14 years, mostly comedy-related content, and have been doing a little bit of everything, writing some books, doing some live shows, podcasting. And most recently, I went back to a graduate program and got a master's degree in depth psychology and creativity.
That's fantastic. So was it comedy that you went into from an early age, or is that something that you developed once you started to get an online presence?
It was definitely, comedy is very much present in my entire family dynamic without it being kind of a choice. I think it's just natural in my family. So I grew up around a lot of really kind of effortlessly funny people, and humor was always like a great connector, I think, for all of us. And I grew up very shy and quiet and introverted. And when I, after I graduated college, I moved to New York City in I lived in Brooklyn and started doing improv comedy and found just such a beautiful form of expression there and was really kind of able to find my voice and find a community of like-minded creative people that loved to laugh as much as I did and loved to make people laugh. I feel like it's such a gift to give and a present to receive. And so it kind of became a big foundation of like everything I do. I wanted there to be some silliness to it. It's really easy, I think, to get bogged down in seriousness. So to find something that's silly or joyful in things has always been kind of like my foundation. So yeah, it's always been pretty present. You'll hear my dog screaming, by the way.
It's okay then.
And the funny thing is, I have a dog with anxiety too, so it's just all there.
Just speaking about mental health and anxiety, so is anxiety something that you've had to deal with throughout your life? And if so, can you just give us just a brief explanation of how it appeared and if comedy helped or if it made it worse, etc.?
Comedy for sure helped. I feel like I've had anxiety since I was young, but never had like a vocabulary around it. Also, sorry, I might be getting a delivery, so she'll be barking for a bit.
It's okay, no problem.
She just really supports conversations like this. I feel like anxiety was always something there. I was very shy and nervous a lot, but I didn't have like a vocabulary for it growing up. I didn't have any like, I just thought that there was something a little like wrong with me. Like I wasn't, the life of the party, or I wasn't like a popular kid in high school, and that like I should want to be more extroverted. And honestly, and I don't know if this is true for you or for a lot of people in the community, that like when I learned the term introvert, it like opened up this whole other like acceptance of what that is, that that was like a thing, a part of personality, and that it was normal. And some people are more introverted and some people are more extroverted. And it just gave me, for lack of a better word, like grace with myself about like the way I expend my energy and the way that I need to recharge myself. And comedy performing, I think, for a while in New York, I was doing a lot of live performances, which made me really confront fear and nervousness and anxiety like head on constantly, which was great because it just kept helping me work through it again and again, over and over again. But it definitely brings it to the forefront. It really taught me the difference between like anxiety or nervousness out of excitement versus anxiety and nervousness out of like dread, panic, like protection kind of thing. So that for me has been like a huge tool of like healing and acceptance. I feel like in times in my life where I'm like in a dark headspace, I can usually like zoom out and realize like I'm not finding the silly like I would normally. And when that kind of is a little bit more empty, that's when I realize like, oh, if I get back to like the silly, joyful stuff or reconnect with that a little bit, it really helps me for sure.
It sounds like psychoeducation really played a massive role in your understanding of anxiety, of like say learning about the physical sensations. A lot of people, when they first experience anxiety, like you said, they may have had it over years, but they just really couldn't put a name to it. They didn't know why they were feeling this way. So like you said, having that knowledge is really powerful. A lot of people I know, when I asked them to submit questions, they said, so they recognize and know that you're introverted, but obviously they're baffled by how you're still able to go on big stages and perform, obviously, as well as you can. Are you able to give them an insight into how that balance works?
Yeah, it is a paradox, right? It's very ironic and in and of itself kind of comedic that I find myself very shy and introverted, but I have this also equal desire to entertain and perform and make people laugh. I don't really know how to explain it other than it's like two sides of the same coin. Like I feel like I definitely have this desire to perform, but at the same time, I have this huge desire to like be a private, quiet person. Mm-hmm. And finding the balance in that for me is huge. Like I could never be at this point in my life, like a road comic that is performing, you know, 8 days a week or 8 shows a week or something like that. I have nothing but respect for people that do that. But for me, I can do a few shows and then I just need to go hide in my little hobbit hole for a little bit and recharge.
Re-energize, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, same for you, even just doing like these live streams and stuff. I wonder for you, do you have like a sensation of like it's for the greater good, or do you get nervous kind of putting yourself out there like this?
And that's like a great question, because when I did, so I don't have a panic disorder anymore. I used to have a panic disorder. I used to go into shopping centers and avoid them. And it sort of like spiraled out of control. But I overcame that panic disorder. But like you know, anxiety is an emotional response. So it never goes away. It's just that the anxiety is no longer there in a disorderly fashion. So if I go to a shopping center now, I may get my heart rate may race a little bit. I may feel a little bit on edge. But I just know that that's anxiety and I'm able to go through that. So I think, like you say, when I first started doing interviews and things, I did get the anxiety, but I never had like a full-blown panic attack or anything from it. So I think acknowledging and knowing that you feel anxious, but being able to continue to do the things you do, well, that's kind of the main message of DLC anxiety. So like you say, I'm now able to speak to people and do conversations in person, which is crazy when you think about it, when I wouldn't even be in a like a room full of 50 people in a shop because I get too anxious and have to go. Do you think that it's a role that we put on that we master and that other person is still there?
Is the panic person still part of you, you mean?
No, I just mean like for yourself, where you say you've got this introverted side to you, which is obviously the core of who you are. So when you're going and performing, do you think it's almost like a role that you've mastered?
Yeah, it's interesting that you talk about this, because this is kind of what I've focused a lot on in the schoolwork that I've done the last couple of years, is this idea of persona, this idea of, and that because of things like social media and because of like, you know, that we brand ourselves and our businesses or whatever it is online, and especially as content creators, like you are the product that you're selling, and to be able to, you know, proposition yourself in a way to like market to an audience, you're essentially building like a persona of what it is that is your product for people. And for me, I think a lot of anxiety started to come a few years ago when I realized like the persona part of me was becoming more of me versus me.
And especially, especially with online, because you never switch off, right?
Right. And it's like you could technically, in the early, you know, eras of content creation, be working without knowing it 24 hours a day. Like, you are your own business and you are your own boss. So you have to create your own structure, which they don't really teach you how to create your structure. You have to teach yourself.
And we're normally extremely lazy at it.
I know. I've learned the hard way that I'm not very good at being my own boss sometimes. But there's definitely in performance, this persona side that definitely takes over. I think when I'm doing like live shows, when people have paid for an experience that you really want to offer to them. But I'm also learning how to balance this idea of persona with my actual person and be able to be myself versus like a version of myself that got curated because of so much internet content. And I think the struggle for me came because I had this like unconscious imbalance of like, if I'm not the person that everyone knows me as being online, who am I? And that's like a very bleak thought to have. and to be like, oh, I'm not going to curse, expletive, what do I do now? And I think instead of like, my first thought was like, I got to like destroy this whole persona side of me and figure out who I am. But that's what I found for myself is not necessarily the best balance. It's integrating these two parts of myself and realizing that they serve a purpose for me in different ways, and being able to kind of make sure that I'm like aligning myself with myself or my persona in the moments that are appropriate for that. I've grown just like hyper curious about how internet content creation and this like era of influencers is solidifying like this persona side of people for better or worse. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like we're going to really start to see, especially like mental health like this has never been as saturated in an online forum than it is right now. Like when we all first started making content online, it was just like, here's me throwing a wig on and trying to do something funny. And now we talk about burnout, and now we talk about mental health and anxiety. And a lot of it, I think, comes from our relationship with social media tools and social media platforms. And I think there's a lot of exploration, both like individually and collectively, that we're all going to be kind of investigating and seeing in the next few years of how this whole world has affected and continues to affect us, like, for better or worse, you know?
I often say that, like you say, social media may have created a lot of the anxieties that we have. So it's important to have mental health communities, not just myself, but other people doing great work as well. Almost like a little corner of social media that you can go to, and like you say, and just really start to take the weight off your shoulder and have these conversations and be open. And because when we speak to each other, you obviously see similarities in stories, and that's where people feel less alone. They feel less isolated, and it also motivates them, because I know at the start of that panic disorder, when I was feeling all these symptoms I'd never felt, I thought that was me for good. I thought I would never overcome it. But what actually got me through the situation was I actually opened up to a close friend of mine who told me that he'd been through something similar. And it was that conversation that really like lifted the weight off my shoulder and really helped me kickstart the recovery. So that was really the burning passion that I wanted to do online, just have these open conversations, just so other people know that, they're getting these scary symptoms. The mind's tricking them, that it's not anxiety, but just know that you're not alone and that there is other people going through that.
Yeah, it's beautiful and like mind-blowing when you realize that other people experience some of the things that you feel so isolated in sometimes. And that's kind of the beauty of this ability to like to connect with each other. When I was in college, I was, and I've talked about this in books before, that I had like a pretty intense eating disorder. And this was like at the very beginning of Facebook and the internet. So there wasn't a lot of resources. And I remember going to like a Borders bookstore and reading books about it and hearing that other people were going through something I was going through that I could not, in my own chaotic brain, figure out for myself. And it just alleviated this heaviness that I didn't even realize I was walking around with every single day. So it's been really great, I think, especially for communities like yours, to just like normalize these types of conversations and make it feel, you know, we all got something swirling around up in here. This thing is the most beautiful and chaotic tool we all have.
Definitely. I want to get over to some of the community questions because there was loads in there. So I'll just fire them at you because I know you'll be fantastic with them. So the first one is, have you ever experienced a panic attack or high levels of anxiety on stage? And if so, how did you get through it?
On stage, see, my brain also does this fun compartmentalization where like if I've experienced something like really intense on stage, when it's over, I have an ability to like block out how intense that was. However, I can't remember one specific instance on stage, but I can remember, I've been in Los Angeles now for like a decade. And right before I left New York to move out here, I started having panic attacks on the subways all the time. And I had experienced panic attacks before, but I was so kind of embarrassed by them that I like didn't really have anyone to talk to about it. And I couldn't figure out it for myself. And it got to the point where like, even before I got on the subway, I was like talking myself into a panic attack and really kind of spiraling because I had taken the subway for years up until that point. Now suddenly this is a trigger situation and I need it for transportation. Like I can't not be part of the system. And then I finally started seeing a therapist and was able to talk through the core issues that it's not the subway. It's like I'm making a big move in my life. I'm about to uproot and shift everything. And there's a lot of underlying emotional stress that's, you know, being triggered in these tiny cars that take me from point A to point B that are essentially like moving in a sense. So it started to happen to me more in just sort of lower stakes situations, which was even more stressful almost. Like if it had happened on stage, I feel like I had all the tools in a theater setting to like push myself through and like knock myself out of that situation. But in more like isolated experiences, it felt even stranger that this was happening when there was no foreseen like direct trigger that was making it happen. And that's what really helped me start to understand that it wasn't necessarily external influences all the time. It was a lot of just like untangled kind of emotional knots in my story that I hadn't really fully addressed before. So I can't advocate for therapy enough.
There's so much talk about it, and I'm sure you've heard online, like a stress jug where you build up all the stress within the jug until it overflows. And I imagine your therapist may have touched that with you. Just going back to the panic attacks in the subway, what was the reason that you had embarrassment? I'm just wondering, where do you think that stemmed from?
I think it was because I didn't understand like physiologically what was happening with my body. I feel like I would start sweating and I'd get flush completely and I'd get really nauseous, and you're in a car with a bunch of people and you can't hide anywhere. And I remember like a few times having to get off the subway and like go up to the street. And I remember just like putting my hands in snow that was like on the side of the street just to like re-regulate my body temperature. And I think it was just the, oh my God, are people looking at me like I'm acting weird, which is stupid to say in New York City where everyone's acting a little weird all the time. So yeah. I think I was just like, oh, there's something about my body that's indicating out of my control that I'm not in control of my body right now. And it's making me even more and more and more panicked and I can't bring myself back down. So I think it was, and you know, the first couple of times it happened, I thought it was just like, it must have been caused by something in that specific moment. It won't happen again. Like that's probably done. And then when it started to continue to happen, that's kind of when it was like, I have to kind of surrender to this and figure out what it is rather than doing what I'm used to doing, which is thinking I can handle this by myself, which clearly hadn't been working up until that point.
But how long did it take you to, how are you on subways now, for example?
I'm pretty good. I get claustrophobic in general in life. And so even on planes, like if they're like the air system isn't working, I get a little panicky. I can feel it in my body. So it's kind of goes back to like what you were saying. Once you realize it's like a feeling and a response and that like you're not going to die from it, which is so hard to convince yourself in the moment, because it just feels like, well, this is it. I've had a good run and today's the day.
Well, the thing is, the panic response, its main job is to alert you to a fear, danger. But like you say, the problem is that when it happens in a disorderly fashion, so when you're on the subway, there is no fear or danger there. So your body then looks inwards and starts to look at your racing thoughts, starts to look at, like you say, the physical sensations. And it's crazy, but the brain almost takes a screenshot of the place where you are and then fixates that that is the issue. And that's where the avoidance comes in. So like with myself with the shopping centers, you start to avoid this situation, like you said, that you've been going to for all your life, but now you're suddenly scared and afraid because anxiety is happening there. And it is so important for people to know that, like you just mentioned, that it's not the location. And that, and when you incorporate that behavior and start to avoid the situation, it really pours fuel onto the anxiety and it creates more anxiety. And like you say, you could even be thinking about going to the subway and then getting anxious about it, because you just mentioned that you were almost talking yourself into the anxiety.
Yeah, it definitely became this, in the like a battle in my brain of, okay, we're gonna go and get on the subway, we're not gonna panic this time, it's gonna be fine. And then you start to feel this like fizzle up and you're like, no, which makes it fizzle harder and faster and stronger. And it was just the realization that I couldn't think myself out of this, which is all you wanna do in that moment is go, why can't I just think this way?
Yeah, again, the problem is when we, even if we're trying to not think about something, we're almost shining a big bright light on that thing and telling the brain that we need to pay attention to it. And the next question is how to shut off your brain when anxiety won't let you sleep. So what would you say, how is your sleeping routine, and do you have any go-tos to help you relax and get you in sleep mode?
I am definitely a sensitive sleeper. When I am in more of like a worry kind of moment in my life, I definitely have trouble sleeping. So and I am a brat when I don't sleep well. Like I am such a cranky baby if I don't get a good night's sleep. And yeah, I feel like everyone is. And my husband is such an, he's so great at sleeping, and it's, I get so jealous.
And you get jealous, yeah. do you ever nudge him in the middle of the night just because you're jealous?
Yeah. I'll wake him back up and just be like, if I can't sleep, that means we can't sleep right now. But I definitely do the melatonin situation. And then occasionally I'll listen to like Headspace sleep meditations to try and help me get to sleep. And I've listened to them so many times that like my brain has them memorized now, which is a little helpful because it's like conditioning almost, that it's like, we know this dialogue, it's time to put ourselves to sleep. But I've also, and this is something I have talked to my therapist about too, that my brain activity at night is pretty wild and can be pretty dialed up. And just in general, trying to be gentler to myself in those moments, and the same just sort of acknowledgement of, all right, we're awake now, and this is, and we're going to be thinking about some things, and that's okay. And we might be tired tomorrow, and that's fine, versus like, God, we're awake and tomorrow's ruined and everything's ruined and everything's bad. So let's start thinking about some stuff that makes us feel worse right now. And it's so much easier said than done, but it's definitely like a process of trying to remind myself in those moments that this is fine. This is okay. You've done this before and you might do it again. And here we are. It's going to be okay. But I definitely have collected, like, this is how I know I'm at a certain age in my life, is that I sleep with so many accessories now. I have like an eye situation. I have a knee pillow that goes between my knees. I have like a pillow for sleeping on my side, but I've just collected all these accessories to try and facilitate the sleep process as best as I can. And they do help, honestly.
Yeah, I always say when people say, how do I sleep when I'm anxious? I always say, like, you have to think that anxiety is there to alert you to a danger. We know there's no danger there, but you're not going to be going to sleep when you're anxious because your body's looking and searching for danger. So like you say, get up, do something mindful. So I reading's really good because it almost tires the eyes naturally. So then once the anxiety's passed through, you can then try and go to sleep again. But yeah, meditation's great as well. And the Calm app and all other apps like Headspace and things are great, aren't they? Especially for getting you into a routine. Grace, the next question is, this is a great question, actually. Why does reading about anxiety or hearing about it trigger me? Have you ever experienced this and do you have any advice?
I was actually going to ask you this question because you've created such a beautiful platform for yourself that I'm not deflecting, I will answer this, but I'm curious what your answer is, that in being so consistently in conversations about anxiety, is that helpful for you, or do you create boundaries in which you're like, I can do this a couple of days a week and then I have to go do some other things, so I'm not, this is my only world right now?
No, yeah. So going back to what we said earlier, when you said about not switching off because of having like an online presence, it definitely is a 7 day a week, get up every morning and be in this mode of speaking about mental health. I don't see it detrimental to me. I can see it. And I think that's probably because I'm not in the middle of an anxiety disorder. I think if someone's in the middle of an anxiety disorder, and they're ruminating and scared of the certain symptoms and like ruminating on different aspects of anxiety, I think that's different to psychoeducation, where they're actually learning about the physical symptoms which are going to help them, because anxiety is always the fear of the unknown. So when we learn about these symptoms and we take away that unknown, then it starts to reduce the anxiety. But yeah, that's a great question, that whether I'm speaking about it all the time, maybe it's something that I should really like look into. But I think from it putting me on the spot, I would say that it doesn't. And the reason that it doesn't is probably because I'm not in the anxiety disorder now. However, we always encourage people, even if they're in an anxiety disorder, to speak about it and speak openly to other people. But I think it's all about the rumination. So if you're ruminating on it and fixating on it, and definitely your inner critic. So if your inner critic's telling you that everything's bad, so if you're looking at anxiety from a bad angle, then that's going to be bad for you. I think it's the way that like your inner voice is speaking to you, because I know that you'll be able to relate to this, is that when you're dealing with anxiety, you have this inner critic that's telling you you're not good enough, telling you that you're not going to overcome the anxiety, telling you that the symptoms that you're feeling aren't anxiety, that it's health, that it's something that's wrong with you, that your heart's racing for a reason, that's not anxiety, that it could be a medical emergency. Or often people really fixate on the heart rate and the breathing and can really end up in A&E, accident and emergency, because they've convinced themselves that it is a medical emergency. So I think, I think where your attention lies is super important. So if it's psychoeducation and you're doing it from a good angle, that's great. But if you're ruminating on it and your inner critic's really telling you this narrative that's really not beneficial for you, I think that's when you have to start to look at it.
Yeah, it just comes down to, I really think, exactly like you're saying, being really conscious of, as conscious as you can be of like your why, I guess. I think for me, sometimes, you know, mindless scrolling, I'll catch myself feeling this anxiety that I'm just like doing, you know, comparisons of my life to these curated lives of other people. And I'm feeling like I'm not doing enough, or I'm not creating enough, or I'm not participating. And I'll work myself up. And when I catch myself and I go, okay, you know, right now, this is not the thing. I'm indulging in this for negative reasons. I'm not, you know, exposing myself to this for good reasons. And so what's something I enjoy that I can reset myself with? And it's usually a weighted blanket and reality television that I like to let my brain sort of shut itself off and enjoy this other entertaining aspect or avenue. And I've heard too that, like, if you are trying to overcome, you know, anxiety, addiction, anything that is very based in, like, the way you construct your thoughts, it's best to put yourself in as positive of an attitude when you expose yourself to information in those areas versus going in already, like you're saying, your inner critic is dialed up and is ready to just make you feel terrible, because then all of the actual positives in that situation are immediately perceived as negatives and increase the anxiety, increase the you know, negative self-talk and things like that. Again, one of those easier said than done, but I would say catching yourself and kind of pivoting into like a hobby or a walk or something that allows you to just be back in your body, kind of recenter yourself in some capacity, has been really helpful for me.
I'd also like, yeah, I'm thinking about it now. I think a good thing to add is that maybe not doing it in high levels of anxiety, because I was just thinking then, if someone's heart's racing and they're worrying about that, maybe it's something not to do with anxiety. So then they do the education, so they go onto Google, they type it. Well, their mind's going to be fixated on the worst case scenario. And like you say, it's just going to spiral out of control. So I think maybe consuming this anxiety and psychoeducation when you're not obviously in the middle of a panic attack, when you're not at the highest level of anxiety, because we know anxiety is an emotional response. It goes up, it goes down, and passes through you. So I think, yeah, maybe looking at your anxiety level when you're consuming this as well.
Yeah, you know, this is a terrible metaphor, but it's like, if you have an upset stomach, you probably shouldn't go to an all-you-can-eat buffet. Like, you should go in there when your body's feeling okay, so you can actually indulge in all of the offers that it has. There's some connection there.
No, well, I would definitely be the one still going to the buffet.
Oh, same. I can't turn down the buffet. No way.
Two more questions, Grace, just while we have you. There was a good one about... So recently I've had to deal with a move and starting over in my career. Do you have any tips on this?
I mean, starting over in your career, I kind of feel a little bit in that spot right now of making like a pivot and having no clear idea of exactly what I want to do next, which has been challenging and really exciting at the same time. And I think it's trying the best you can to connect to the excitement of possibility rather than the doom of uncertainty of what's happening. I think of it as like threshold crossing, like you're leveling up in some way and you get to start fresh. And I'm a very impatient person, and so I'm learning a lot in therapy about the importance of patience and sort of like sitting in maybe that uncomfortable emotional spot of uncertainty and not knowing what's next, similar to anxiety, like just letting it move through you rather than fighting against it and trying to already be in the future past it, when naturally it will dissipate in its own time. I think giving yourself goals that are gentle, whether that be personal, professional, whatever, are really helpful. I have come from a world where I've gotten to wonderfully create my own structure for a really long time. But now I feel like I'm in a spot where I've given myself no structure, and I'd like to challenge myself a little bit more to create structure in like a new gentle way, rather than trying to go right back to this like hustle culture of like do as much as I possibly can constantly. And it's really scary moving to a new place where maybe you don't know anyone. But there, I feel like, you know, again, social media and also apps like Nextdoor and stuff like that really create opportunities for connection and community in actual physical communities. But that's very scary and exciting. So if you can hold on to the exciting aspect of it as much as possible versus the overwhelming.
If you think of it, if the feeling of excitement as well and anxiety, it's almost like a very similar feeling. It's this rush of emotions that we get. So what you say is using that rush of emotions in a positive way, while you say that almost being nice with that inner dialogue and not listening to the inner critic and the doom side. I'm very much like you on what you were saying there as well. I really want to be at the end, I say, the end product. I hate the process, to be honest.
I hate the middle ground.
Yeah, the middle. I love the end bit and then getting everything out, and if it's a new product or a new book, for example. But the bit where you're doing, I don't mind obviously the creative part, but just after the creative part, before it's out, before you can do it, I hate that.
Oh yeah, when you're in that little limbo where you get to second guess everything you've worked on for a really long time and think about how terrible it probably is versus how great it probably is. Yeah, that part's the worst. But also just the gentleness that like a move on any scale, no matter how like world changing it is, like just think about a little bit every day rather than I have to be settled and have everything figured out by the end of this week. No, just do a little bit every day.
I think journaling would be helpful, especially in that, because like you say, you could almost write down your achievements for the day, and seeing those little steps can motivate you as well. I know journaling helped me when I went through the anxiety disorder. But yeah, that's really good advice. The last question, Grace, is how do you prevent anxiety or a fear of failing in your career from holding you back? So have you ever had a fear of failure and maybe missed an opportunity because of it?
All the time, constantly, every day. All day. I feel like in any creative endeavor, there's always a critic. There's always a critic that can be constructive or can be catastrophic. And so it's, again, coming down to like, what is this fear, or dialoguing even with fear, the feeling that you have, like doing journaling or meditation or some sort of like just inner slow down moment of, okay, what is this feeling that I'm having? It seems like fear, but okay, let me talk to it and with it a little bit. Is it fear of failure, or is it fear that I'm excited? Is it fear that you want it to be great? Is it fear that people are going to think you're awful and terrible, and you know, the imposter syndrome of all of it comes to fruition? And I do believe that when people get into creative endeavors, there is a core of something good that, you know, has been the impetus for why you're even pursuing this. And reminding and uncovering what that is, I feel like social media a lot of times can be seen as this really narcissistic tool and has become like a very superficial kind of outlet a lot of times, or it can be construed that way. And sometimes I get very overwhelmed by participating in it because I don't want to seem like a narcissist or superficial or all this, but then when I get back to like my core is that I want to make people laugh, I want to be able to connect with people, I don't want people to feel alone the same way that I felt, similar to what you were saying about making and building and participating in this community, that when I'm able to connect to those feelings that I know are genuine and pure and good and motivating, it far exceeds the negatives of being like, and you're not going to please everyone. and that's a really hard pill to swallow. That, like, not everyone's gonna love everything you do, and you. I start to think sometimes too about like the looking back effect. Like, would future me look back and be kind of bummed that I didn't just do it, or I didn't just try it, or I didn't, you know, in improv, the foundation is like follow your fear. So it's like step on stage, you have no idea what's about to happen, but trust that something great could happen. And that's what I try to remind myself when I start really talking negatively and keep myself from doing anything creative.
So if you've like had missed opportunities in the past, how do you stop yourself from like living in regret that I should have done this?
That's really tough. Like, I've been trying to write another book for a while, and I have felt very on and off about it at times, because I feel like I'm in more of a kind of sitting back mode and like taking things in the world and in life versus like an exporting content constantly kind of mode. And that was really hard for me to like accept, because you get so ingrained that you have to continuously be part of this hamster wheel, or people will forget about you. And, you know, there's a billion other people trying to do stuff on these platforms. But I realized that the more I'm able to kind of do some introspection, the more clarity I'll have about like the purpose of another book and the thoughts behind another book and the feeling that I want to elicit with another book versus just trying to get it done for the sake of getting another book done right now. So I've wrestled with like trying to just churn something out versus, you know, letting myself have permission to take more time with it. And to let it kind of evolve in a way that's more organic rather than, oh, this is a, here's something in this moment that I made for the sake of making it rather than for the sake of feeling proud of making it.
Does that feel a little bit, because like you say, this the online career you have, it's almost built upon the foundation of product. So does it feel really alien to you to really do a 180 on that?
It does. And I think that's been kind of like the last 3 or 4 years of my life have been kind of deconstructing this hustle thing that I was in without even realizing it. I was so busy that I wasn't even able to like realize how burnt out and tired and stressed out I was, and how the thing that brought me so much joy was creating so much like inner chaos for me. And it's taken a long time to like be okay slowing down and saying no to things right now, and like kind of going back to school and experiencing a different world of education and a different world of community, and you know, finishing school and still being in a state of not totally sure what's next is very scary, and so foreign to me, because for so long it was just like things are happening. And now it's like, oh, this is a different season of my life. So this is okay right now, because I feel a bit like I'm graduating, you know, in so many ways, literally and metaphorically, out of kind of an era that served me at that time, but a lot of the things don't need to come with me in the future. But I'm still very much in kind of this open state of figuring out what things do come with me in the future, and where do I want to go from here, and allowing myself to be more present. I don't think I was ever present for like a decade of content creation. I think I was always moving on to what's next, rather than actually being able to sit and enjoy and be thoughtful about all the things that I was trying to create. So it's very different, but it's a daily kind of experience.
It does sound like you're far along the stage of figuring it out, though, from everything you're saying, just from an outside point of view. And I'm not just saying that. It really does feel like you're further along that process of knowing this new version of yourself that you want to live by. And like you say, this new version of, there's always been you, but this new version of you, it's going to be less stress, less anxiety. And like, doing more things that you enjoy doing, and really, like you say, trying to live in the moment and not just almost waking up and just doing it for doing its sake.
And it's also just being a bit more thoughtful about like what matters to me right now in content creation. Like I do still love making absolutely frivolous, ridiculous stuff, but at the same time, you know, I just came off of this education that was very introspective and very deep, and I'd like to integrate some of those ideas moving forward. I don't know exactly how yet, so I'm in this processing phase, I think, and letting myself sort of figure out how to make content that both feels joyful and silly and also like sneaky deep, maybe.
Well, I'm really excited to see what's next, Grace. I really appreciate you taking the time out to speak to the community. If people don't follow you already, where can they find you on Instagram? And also, where can they get, like, so you say you've got books out, are they on Amazon, etc.?
Yeah, I have Grace's Guide and Grace and Style on Amazon. And then I'm just at Grace Helbig on social media platforms. And I do, the most consistent form of content is my best friend, Mamrie Hart, and I have a podcast called Let's Make It Weird every Wednesday. You can listen to it wherever you get all your podcasts.
Fantastic. That's wonderful. Thank you so much, Grace. Like I said, I really appreciate it. And I know the community will get a lot from the conversation. So thank you.
Thanks, Dean.
Enjoy the rest of your day.
You too. Take care. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye.